Good morning. It's good to see you. It's good to be back here this morning. Thank you so much for that wonderful singing in our worship. And this morning, we are going to look at Genesis 22 and how it relates to Jesus. This year, in your devotional studies at home, we are putting a special emphasis on Jesus and on His life and on His sacrifice and Him coming here. And so as we do that, from time to time, we're going to speak about those thoughts and those ideas in our Sunday morning worship. And this morning, I especially wanted to talk about this week's devotionals and setting the stage for those. In Genesis 22, of course, we read about how how Isaac was prepared as a sacrifice to God. When you go back to that wonderful chapter of Genesis 22 and you read about God's call to Abraham, about how that he was to take his only son, Isaac, his only son through Sarah, and was to go and to sacrifice him on the altar for God. It's really a dramatic picture that's painted, a kind of shocking request of God, if you will. Because God has always been a God who abhors child sacrifice. And here is God asking for Abraham to sacrifice his only son Isaac. Now God knows what he's going to do in the end and that this will not result in a child sacrifice. But he's testing, as the Hebrews writer tells us, he is testing, he's trying the faith of Abraham. And so we have this narrative of faith, of the faith of Abraham, but not only Abraham, but we also see in it an allusion to Jesus. Now, Isaac is not going to actually become a sacrifice, at least not in reality, but Jesus will. And so, in a lot of ways, Isaac is setting the stage for a sacrifice to come. Both Isaac sacrifice and the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus are very similar in so many ways. Both stories are about fathers who are asked who are willing to give up their sons. It's an amazing narrative or event of faith. Both stories resulted in the consummation of the will of God through faith. When we look at these and we examine how Isaac is so similar, the sacrifice of Isaac to that of Jesus, I want you to notice a few things about their sacrifice and about their similarities. Number one, in a sense, Isaac, like Jesus, is the only begotten of his father. Isaac was the only son that Abraham had through his wife, Sarah. You go to chapter 23 and you find out she lives just a few more years, but no more children. This is Isaac's it. Isaac was the promised child. He was the child they waited for. And he was the only child they had. You also notice, again, what the Hebrews writer says in Hebrews chapter 11. He says, by faith, Abraham, when God tested him or tried him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Isaac, like Jesus, was only begotten of his father. You also notice that both Isaac and Jesus had a supernatural birth. We looked at this a little bit last week in talking about the promises of Abraham, but You remember what the reaction of Sarah is as she hears, and even if you read earlier in chapter 18 about when Abraham heard that promise restated that he would have a child through Sarah. Both of them had the same reaction. What was it? To laugh. Why? It wasn't a joyous laugh, but it was a piteous laugh in that both of them knew what? They were well beyond the years of bearing children. And yet here is God promising that within a year you will have a child. Genesis chapter 19. Isaac was a child who, in normal circumstances, wasn't going to be born. You also notice that he and Jesus were both children of promise. Just as Jesus was a promised child of God, you go through the Old Testament and you read over and over again about the prophecies of the coming Messiah. Isaac was a promised child. You go back in the book of Genesis, you go all the way back to chapter 12, and you look forward, God reaffirming that promise to Abraham that he would have a child, and the child would come through Sarah. Isaac was the promised child as well. Notice again Hebrews chapter 11, who embraced, verse number 17, Abraham, who had embraced the promises of God. You go over to Galatians chapter 4, and you look at that context there in verses 22 and following. And we're not going to read this whole section, but I want to note a couple of verses there where Paul is discussing with the Galatians about Isaac's sacrifice and talking about how we are all children of Abraham. You notice in verse number 23, but the son of the slave was born according to the flesh, while the son of the free woman was born through promise. All right, he's talking about Ishmael and Isaac there, and how Ishmael was born to the woman who had been a slave, yet Isaac came through Sarah, who was the promise of God. You go on down to verse 28, he continues, he says, now you, brothers, like Isaac, are children of promise, and we are of the promise of Jesus. And so, like Jesus, Isaac was a child of promise. You also note something else when you go back to Genesis 22 and you read in the context there as they're preparing the sacrifice, preparing to go up on the mountain. And what does Abraham do? But he lays the wood on the arms of Isaac. Isn't that an amazing allusion to what's going to happen to Jesus as the wood is laid upon Jesus, just as it was with Isaac? Isaac was going to carry his own sacrifice, his own tools for the sacrifice upon that mountain. Amazing thing that was laid on Isaac there. You also notice there that the site where Isaac was to be sacrificed is by many thought to be geographically the same place as Jesus, or very close to where Jesus gave his sacrifice, where he was crucified. And then you also note back in Genesis 22, when Abraham made the statement, God will provide what? For himself, a lamb. Well, what is that? That's a prophetic statement of Abraham. Abraham doesn't even realize it. When Isaac asked him, he says, where's the lamb? In verse number 7. Where's the lamb for sale? Here's the wood, here's all the other things we need, but where's the lamb? And Abraham says, God will provide a lamb. Well, that lamb was not going to be Isaac that day. The lamb would actually be Jesus Christ. And so this morning, With these two images in mind, the image of Isaac as a sacrificial son and the image of Jesus as the sacrificial son, I want to think this morning about what it means to sacrifice. When we talk about as children of God, we are to sacrifice, right, to God, just as He sacrificed to us. What does it mean? And I think there's a lot here to teach us from Abraham and Isaac and Jesus about what it is to sacrifice. You notice, number one, that sacrifice means giving up something you love. You notice again that Abraham sacrificed his son, the son whom he loved. If you don't love it, it's not a sacrifice. Think about that for just a minute. If you don't love it, it's not truly a sacrifice. If somebody asked you to give up something, or somebody made a request of you and they had a need and they asked you for something that you didn't really care about, would that be much of a sacrifice for you to give up? But now, on the other hand, what if somebody needed something and they asked for the clothes on your back? That becomes more of a sacrifice, doesn't it? What if somebody was to ask for your car? For you to give up your car, would that be a sacrifice? What if somebody asked you to give up your family? Would that be a sacrifice? Notice again in Genesis 22, as God is calling Abraham to sacrifice his son, as he's asking him to act in faith, he says in verse number 2 of Genesis 22, "Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love." What do you notice about what's going on here? With each statement, God is increasing the amount of weight upon what He's asking Abraham to do. Take your son, your only son, whom you love. Each statement adds a greater weight on it. It's not just any son, it's not just any child, but it's your son. And it's not like you have lots of other sons. This is your only son. And it's not like you don't like him. You love him. You care deeply for him. As we realize what's going on, we understand that what God is asking of Abraham has a depth to it that can even be difficult for us to understand, of how he could even do what he did. Especially when we consider how much he loved his son. It's akin to what's said during the Passover in Exodus chapter 12, when they are being directed about how to prepare for the Passover. And you notice in that context how God says to Moses that a man shall take a lamb, a lamb for a household. If his household's too small, for a lamb. But then, at the end of verse number 4, he says, to what can you eat shall make your count for the lamb? And then finally in verse 5, he says, your lamb. He's making it more personal for each one of them. I can't help but think about David and what Nathan said to him as he came to him in 2 Samuel chapter 12. You remember what happened after David sinned with Bathsheba, and he gives him that illustration of the man who had the lamb that he loved, right, that he cared for, and his evil neighbor just came and took it away. Why does he illustrate it that way? He wants you to understand how much this man loved that sheep, how much it meant to him. and you've taken it away. You've taken away Bathsheba from her husband, and her husband loved her. You go back to Genesis 22 and verse number 7. And just for a minute, getting in the context of the situation, I want you to notice what Isaac says to his father. Now, Isaac, we believe, was, you know, anywhere 10 to 12 years old, right? He's not an infant. He may even be older. He's done a lot of things with his father. And here they are, and all his dad's told him is that we're going to sacrifice to the Lord, right? And there they are, and they're going up the mountain. And they get up there, and they're beginning to prepare the sacrifice. And as you might imagine, he begins to wonder, why? I see the fire. Dad brought it up the mountain. I carried the wood. I wonder, where's the lamb? And so he asks his dad, and Abraham says, "Here I am, my son." And Isaac says to him, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for a burnt offering?" Now, he's done this before. He knows what's expected of these sacrifices. Now, Abraham's not even going to tell him yet what's going on. Now, can you imagine as a father being asked that question, where is the lamb, and you know the answer to the question? How would your heart break inside of you? And how difficult would it be to answer that question? He goes on in verse number 8 to say, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. How difficult that must have been for him. The Lord will provide the lamb. Now, Abraham believes that lamb. And you go to Hebrews chapter 11, he believes it's Isaac. When he's on that mountain, when he's answering Isaac's question, he believes it's Isaac. But it wasn't, was it? But God did provide a lamb for himself. You go to the book of John, chapter 1 and verse 29, is John the Immerser, John the Baptist, is out with his disciples, and he sees one, his cousin, Jesus. You notice his statement in John 1, 29. He saw Jesus coming toward him, and he said, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." Behold the Lamb. What Abraham had prophesied so many years ago finally came about. And it came spoken out of John the Immerser's mouth. Behold the Lamb of God. It's interesting when you get to the book of Revelation and God is revealing His will through John, and He's using that very illustrative language. Jesus is revealed initially as the Lion of Judah. But the picture, the image that's really painted is that of a lamb. And think about Isaiah's beautiful picture and at the same time horrendous picture in Isaiah 53 of Jesus as the Lamb of God led to the slaughter. Abraham said, God will provide a lamb. He will provide the lamb. And he did. It was the lamb he loved. When you think about sacrifice, it's not sacrifice if we don't love it. Sacrifice means giving up something you love. We also note that sacrifice means obedience, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. Back in Genesis chapter 22, three times somebody calls out to Abraham. And three times Abraham responds, "Here I am." In verse number 1 of Genesis 22, God calls out to Abraham. He says, "Abraham." Abraham said, "Here am I." Verse number 7, his son calls out, "Father, here I am." Verse number 11, again, the angel calls out. The angel of the Lord calls out, "Abraham, Abraham." As he's about to bring that knife down. He says, "Here am I." I can't help but be reminded of what Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 8 as he is revealing his call of being a prophet. You remember there that God calls out to him, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" And Isaiah says, "Here am I." That willingness to submit, that willingness to obey what God has called us to do. Dietrich Bonhoeffer once said, "One act of obedience is better than 1,000 sermons." One act of obedience is better than 1,000 sermons. What does our obedience say to God? What did Abraham's obedience say to God for him? It justified him. As Paul will quote, he was made righteous. Why? Because of his faith. You notice that Abraham doesn't question God. What's amazing about the context, if you go back to Genesis 22 and you look there at the faith of Abraham, it says in verse number 3, after God has said, "I want you to go and I want you to go take your son out and I want you to sacrifice him," what does verse number 3 tell us? "So early the next morning." Now, I don't know about you, but if God was asking something like that of me, I may drag my feet in the morning. I may not jump up eagerly, ready to go. But the context tells us that Abraham jumped up and he got up early in the morning and prepared to do what God had called him to do. A sacrifice means obedience. Mark Twain once wrote about a time he met a hypocritical businessman whose fortune had been the misfortune of many others. He told Mark Twain piously, "Before I die, I intend to make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. I want to climb to the top of Mount Sinai and read the Ten Commandments aloud." Mark Twain turned and made a suggestion to this man. He says, "I have a better idea. Why don't you stay right at home in Boston and keep them?" Now, we don't keep the Ten Commandments today, but I get his point, don't you? Isn't it more important we live out the will of God than to talk about how much we believe in God? Isn't it a lot more important that people see our faith being lived out than talked about? Isn't that the point of James? You tell me how much faith you have. I will show you my faith by my works. In Genesis 22 and verse 2, God gave Abraham specific directions, didn't he? There were things he wanted from Abraham. He says in verse number 2, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Now, as difficult as that was, Abraham did everything God asked him to do. But what you also notice is that God didn't disclose to Abraham everything he was doing. Sometimes we may say things like, well, I believe if you can show me. If you can tell me exactly what this means or what this is. And sometimes we get the attitude of, God needs to prove himself to me. Is that the faith? Is that the attitude of Abraham? Is that the faith? Or is that the attitude of a believer of God? Here's the reality. God's not going to tell us everything. Jesus told his disciples there was many other things he needed to teach them, but they were not ready to hear it. God is not going to tell us everything. He's not going to tell us why he did everything he did. Are we willing to trust him? Are we willing to be obedient, even in those times? Sacrifice means obedience. It's one thing to talk about sacrifice. It's one thing to talk about sacrificial obedience. It's another thing to sacrificially obey. I'm reminded of Luke 22 and verse 42. Jesus is there in the garden and he's praying to God and he is laying out his heart before God. He is so intense. He's so in the moment that his forehead begins to bleed. And he calls out to his Father and he cries out, if this cup can pass from me. The English Standard Version translates it, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Jesus didn't want to suffer. He didn't want to die in that way. He knew the pain and the agony that was to follow. And he didn't want any part of it. And so he cries out to God, Father, if you're willing, this cup can pass from me. You can remove this from me. And he ends it by saying, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. Even though it was costly for Jesus, even though it was costly for the Father, Jesus saw sacrificial obedience as an opportunity for joy. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2, the Hebrews writer says that That we as children of God need to look or focus our attention on Jesus, looking to Him as the author and finisher of our faith, or perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. He endured the cross, despising the shame. He was obedient when it was hard. He was sacrificial when it was hard. So the Philippians writer, Paul there, writing to the Philippian brethren, he says, brethren, have this mind or this attitude in yourselves that was also in Christ Jesus, who though being in the form of God thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but emptied himself, taking on the form of a bondservant. And being found in the form of a bondservant or a slave, He became obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. God's asked some things of us, hasn't He? There are things that God requires of us to be saved, to be His children, to be members in His body, the church. And sometimes we squabble about those things, don't we? Sometimes we try to find ways out of it. Because some of the things God asks us are difficult. Some things He asks us to give up are hard. Some changes He wants us to make can be very hard for us to do. And yet I'm reminded of the attitude of Jesus. He faced the difficulty. He stood up to it and was obedient, even when things were very, very hard. Sacrifice means obedience. And then finally, sacrifice means acting in faith. In Genesis 22 and verse 5, an amazing statement is made by Abraham. Now, hopefully I can explain why this is such an amazing statement. But there they are, they're standing before the mountain, Mount Moriah. And Abraham said to his young men, the servants who had come with him, he said, stay here with the donkey. Now notice what he says in the very next statement. He says, I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. Why is Abraham there? To sacrifice his son, isn't he? And yet he says to those two servants, I and the boy will come again to you. And again, you go to Hebrews chapter 11, and I want you to note that Abraham believed that day he was going to sacrifice Isaac. That's what he had in his mind. He wasn't thinking of some alternate plan. When he raised that knife after he had tied his son, his only son, the son whom he loved, to that altar to make that sacrifice, he was bringing that knife down. And yet he says to those young men, I and the boy will come again to you. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 17 and following again, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received, now notice this, he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. And notice verse number 19. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. In the mind of Abraham, Isaac had already been sacrificed. He had already done what God had called him to do. How in the world could he do that? I'll give you a knife today and some wood and let you go sacrifice your children. How many of us are going to do that? None of us. How could he do that? Because he believed God. God told him, it was through your son Isaac, this child you will have through Sarah, that your family will grow, you will increase, you will become many generations. Abraham remembered the promise of God. And Abraham went on that mountain thinking God was going to resurrect Isaac. Now, how many resurrections had Abraham seen in his life? I don't know of one. And yet he knew God would fulfill his promise. And he trusted in that so much that he raised that knife and was about to drop it. Although Abraham was wrong about the how, he was right about the who. He acted in faith, not knowing how God would work things out. That's a tremendous amount of faith, isn't it? Oh, to be like that. To have that kind of faith in God. I don't know how. I've devised a plan in my head. I have some scheme of how you might do it. How often do we do that and God works it out a different way? He was wrong about the how. But the important thing was he knew the who. He knew that God would fulfill his promises. He knew God would work it out. Reminded of John chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. You may remember what's going on there in John, and this is Jesus feeding the 5,000. And they've been listening to him, and he sees they're hungry and in need of nourishment. And he has them all to sit down and they start taking a count on the amount of food they have. And they come up woefully short, don't they? They find one young boy, I believe it's Andrew, that finds him, who has what? He has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. I don't know how good a cook you are. That can be hard to feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. We often look at the disciples in that narrative. I want you just for a minute to think about the boy. Now, those 2 fish and 5 loaves would not feed 5,000 in a normal circumstance, but they would feed one family. That boy's family could live off of that and could eat well, couldn't they? And yet he gives it up. You ever think about that? A little boy gives up that food. Now, does he have eyes like we do? Does he have a brain like we do? Does he look around and see all those people and wonder, whoa, what's going on here? And yet Jesus does the impossible. He probably didn't know the how, but he knew the who. The little boy was willing to put his meager lunch in the hands of Jesus And because of that, Jesus worked one of the greatest and most famous miracles of the Gospels. The Lord can do wonderful things with our sacrifices. We may not understand how, but we know who. You may not think much of your sacrifice, but God can do amazing things with your sacrifice. A cheerful girl with bouncy, curly hair was almost 5 years old. Waiting with her mother at the checkout stand, she saw a circle glistening white pearls in a pink foil box. Yeah. Oh, please, Mommy, can I have them? Please, Mommy, please. Yeah. Quickly, the mother checked the back of the little foil box and then looked back into the pleading blue eyes of the little girl's upturned face. $1.95. That's almost $2. If you really want them, I'll think of some extra chores for you, and in no time, you can save enough money to buy them yourself. As soon as Jenny got home, she emptied her piggy bank and counted 17 pennies. After dinner, she did more than her share of chores. She went to the neighbor, Miss McJames, and asked if she could pick dandelions for 10 cents. On her birthday, her grandma gave her another dollar bill. And at last, Jenny had enough money to buy the necklace. Jenny loved that necklace. They made her feel grown up. She wore them everywhere, Sunday school, kindergarten, even to bed. Jenny had a very loving daddy. And every night he would stop whatever he was doing and come upstairs to read her a story. One night when he finished the story, he asked Jenny, "Do you love me?" "Oh, yes, Daddy. You know that I love you." "Then may I have your pearls?" "Oh, Daddy, not my pearls. You can have Princess, the white horse from my collection. Remember, Daddy, the one you gave me, she's my favorite." "That's okay, honey. Daddy loves you. Good night." He brushed her cheek with a kiss. About a week later, after story time, Jenny's dad asked again, "Do you love me?" "Daddy, you know I love you. Then will you give me your pearls?" "Oh, Daddy, not my pearls, but you can have my baby doll, the brand new one I got for my birthday." "That's okay, honey. Sleep well. God bless you, little one. Daddy loves you." And as always, he brushed her cheek with a gentle kiss. Several days later, when Jenny's father came in to read her story, Jenny was sitting on her bed and her lip was trembling. "Here, Daddy," she said. And she held out her hand. She opened it and her beloved pearl necklace was inside. She let it slip into her father's hand. With one hand, her father held the plastic pearls, and with the other, he pulled out of his pocket a blue velvet box. Inside were real pearls. He was waiting for Jenny to be willing to give up her pearls. He had bought those genuine pearls before the first time he asked her. He was just waiting for her. He was waiting for Jenny to give up the cheap stuff so he could give her the real thing. God is waiting for us to give up the cheap stuff so that he can give us the real thing. What does it mean to sacrifice? Sacrifice means giving up something you love. Sacrifice means being obedient, even when it's difficult, especially when it's hard. Sacrifice means acting in faith. In Matthew 16, verse 24, Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow after me." Are we willing to make the sacrifices in our lives for God? Are we willing to trust Him to take our cheap things and to give us something real? This morning, I don't know your relationship with God, but you do, and He does. So we ask the question, are you living a cheap life? We need to realize something about this world. It is fading away. It's ticking down. Your life is fading away. It's ticking away. All those things you hold on to, none of them will last beyond this life. None of those cheap tricks of our world will last out. There's one thing that will. God, Jesus, and His church. If you will give up the cheap stuff, the stuff that causes us to stumble and to fall, the stuff that holds us back, He'll give you something that will not wear away, that will not fade, but will endure. This morning, are you ready to obey? Are you willing to submit your life to His, to Him? If we can help you in any way, please come as together we stand and sing.